Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for you! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
And welcome into another episode of CLNS Radio Celtics Post Game Show. My name is Jess Thomas. I'll be alongside Warren Shaw again. Deja vu all over again from Sunday night. If anybody tuned into that show who's listening now, we'll do it again here. Celtics beat the New York Knicks tonight, 97-89, a bounce back win from the loss to the Magic on Sunday night. So we'll be here talking about a win tonight. And I want to remind everyone that you can call into this show at 347-215-7771 using the Audible podcast toll-free call line. So make sure you check that out. We'll get to that later in the show. And this episode of CLNS Radio Celtics Postgame Show is powered by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world. All of their self-help courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. Claim your free trial membership to Lynda.com today by going to www.lynda.com/CLNS. You can check us out on Twitter at CLNS Radio. Also, you can join the conversation on Facebook at www.facebook.com/CLNSFans. And you can download CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app for iOS and Android. All you have to do is search CLNS Radio in your app marketplace. It's as easy as that. Once again, we'll be breaking down this 97-89 Celtics win over the Knicks. Over the next little bit here. So I'm going to welcome in my co-host again, my friend Warren Shaw. Warren, how are you doing tonight?
Well, much better than Sunday night. I mean, it's deja vu, except this time we got a W. So, I mean, that's always a positive here, you know, on the CLNS post-game show with the Boston Celtics. Great win for Boston tonight. They did not disappoint, you know, because, again, this was a team that could have given them some problems, had given them problems earlier in the year. But they were able to right the ship after a very, very rocky start in the first quarter, getting down 9-0, then entering that run with a 9-0 run of their own to kind of get back in it. But definitely they righted the ship a little bit here tonight versus New York Knicks. And again, it was a nice, nice win and much needed after that loss on Sunday.
Yep, always good to follow the loss of the win, especially on the road. This team, as we've talked about recently, good road team. This win improves the Celtics to 14-12 on the road, which is certainly good, and it's actually doesn't sound good if you're just talking about it on the outside, but if you actually look at depth, there's not a lot of good road teams in the league. Toronto's 14-10 on the road, better than Boston. Cleveland's 16-9, and for Eastern Conference teams, that's it, who are better than the Celtics. Obviously in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder, 14-8, better than the Celtics. The Warriors, 22-4. The Spurs, 14-8. Clippers, 15-9, and that's it. Those are the only teams in the whole NBA who have better road records than the Celtics.
That's more than impressive. I mean, you definitely
brought
something to light here with that. Yeah, I mean, and when you think about it, you know, that has definitely been a strength of this team for the last couple of seasons now. So, you know, I think we talked about a little bit on Sunday. If they can continue that type of, you know, that type of play, that type of focus, yeah, they should be in very good shape. No matter what happens in the playoffs, whether they're on the road or, you know, or at home, as long as you know they're not against some of the, well, the only Eastern Conference elite is Cleveland. So against anybody else but Cleveland, you know, you should feel very, very confident about Boston being able to do something in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to be a good road team. Obviously, you want to be a feared home team. Everyone wants to, and you want people to not want to come into your house for the playoffs at home. But if you can be one of the better road teams in the league, that's huge, because if you can squeak out that road win against a good home team, you never know what could happen in a postseason series, and the Celtics are on that track, which is funny because for a while here, the first couple of years under Brad Stevens, this team was not good on the road. They were bad, really bad, especially on the Western Conference teams on the road. We know how bad they were. They had that 23 or 24 straight losses against Western Conference teams on the road over the last couple of years. They've totally changed that around. That's not the case anymore. And actually, Sean Grandy, the Celtics play-by-play guy on the radio, he always has great road stats. And what he posted tonight was the first 75 road games under Brad Stevens. Celtics are 21-54 for a win percentage of 28%. Since those 75 games, the Celtics are 21-12 in their last 34 for a 63.6 winning percentage. So it has turned around big time, and that's obviously huge. And I think, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but I think you got to give definitely at least a handful of credit to Brad Stevens for that, because he gets the team focused no matter where they play. He doesn't care if it's road or home. He's always even keel no matter where it is. And I think that trickles down, because you got to keep your team focused for road games. And I think he does a great job of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the coach's actual effect on locker rooms and teams in the NBA right now, especially you look at a team like the Phoenix Suns and what happened with Coach Hornacek out there, you know, him losing the locker room and having comparable talent, at least that they shouldn't have lost 2 of 19. I mean, yeah, 2 and 19 in the last 21 to get that guy fired. And you take Stevens, for instance, again, he was learning his craft, if you will, as a coach, and learning his way to reach NBA players. And I think in those first, you know, initial games, the first couple of years, and he's figured out what works for him. He's figured out a formula that he can that gets him into the minds of his players, and he himself knows exactly what he's trying to translate and what he wants to do. So I think that's a great point. You definitely got to give Stevens credit for the Celtics' success on the road.
Yeah, I like what you said, that you don't know what credit you can give to coaches because they don't play the game. But I think if anything you can give to coaches, it's getting a team motivated and focused, because it's easy if you're playing a long season. It's easy for a team to just kind of forget that they need to stay focused. Like, oh, whatever, we'll just cruise through this game. We're a little tired. We play a lot of games. Then you have that coach step in there. And if they respect the coach would be like, hey, play the game. Like, get focused. We got a job to do. And he seems like the kind of guy who's like that. So I think that's where coaches' effects comes in the most, really.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that. And you know, I said at this point, there was some trepidation, and not to rehash a lot of old history here, but a lot of people, including myself, was initially stunned when Stevens was hired. And it's like, where did this even come from? And again, he took some time to grow into the role. A lot of questions about his rotations, but seems to be, you know, what Boston has needed in that, and still arguably, you know, now I think Isaiah has proven himself in getting that All-Star bid, but Stevens is definitely still one of the most marketable assets of this franchise because he is such a good coach and has such a calming effect on them. After timeout plays, all those things too seem to be heralded getting him up there and very well respected in the coaching rankings right now. So. Good job for Brad Stevens. Good job for the Celtics on the hire thus far. And I think any questions about whether or not he was the right guy for the job, I think that at least for right now, I mean, you know, we're still got a long way to go here. But I think, you know, I think he's answered a lot of those questions and seems to be has his foot firmly planted in, you know, in the success of this franchise.
Yeah, and he's such a well-respected coach too. All other coaches love him. He's very popular. And I think what do you look for in a person in life in general? Consistency. That's what you want in a person. That's how people become successful. That's how you learn to rely on people, because they have consistency. You know what you're going to get. And that's exactly what he does. They know what they're going to get. He's an extremely consistent coach. Doesn't get too excited. Doesn't get too down. I think that's what makes him such a good coach. So I hope they keep him for a long time, because like you said, I was skeptical too. I was like, Brad Stevens never even coached in the NBA, but I am very, very happy with him. So good for Brad and good for them on the road. So I didn't even mean to start the show with that, but it was a good way to start the show with the Celtics playing so well on the road, which is obviously important. So this win makes the Celtics 28-22 now. So they're keep jumping up the ranks of the Eastern Conference. It drops the Knicks to 23-28. Once again, with a 97-89 score. Celtics in favor, get the win. You're listening to CLNS Radio, Celtics postgame show. Jeff Thomas, Warren Shaw here for a second straight game. Like you said, Warren, they got down 9-0 in the first. Then they got the next 9 points, got down a little bit again, and the Celtics finished first quarter and started the second quarter combined on a 14-2 run, and all of a sudden they had a 29-22 lead after getting down early. And then they took it from there, played really well the rest of the game. And I think what we should start on is two things: the bench play in this game, and more specifically, Tyler Zeller, because he finally got a chance. He played 26 minutes, and he got 16 points, 10 rebounds. I'm not sure about the rebounds, but the points is a season high for Zeller, and he shot 8 for 13 from the field. So you give this guy a chance, he does a good job. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to eat a little crow here because Zeller is somebody who I wasn't sad when he fell out of the rotation. I just felt like they needed to find a way to maximize the minutes of Sullinger and Olynyk here. And then at that time, Lee was playing too. So I just felt like somebody had to go from the bigs. Obviously Amir was playing too as well. So it was just too many guys trying to get minutes. And I felt like Zeller was probably the guy who was the least effective in general. Although, again, he's a nice guy in terms of the pick and pop, does his job offensively, defensively, doesn't really hurt you. But I didn't think he was being dynamic enough to begin the season. And to his credit, he stayed professional the entire time, fell out of the rotation completely for a little bit, and then was only getting spot minutes. And now, I think in the last 10 games or so, 15 maybe, he has been playing a little bit of a role. And then tonight they had to roll with him because he definitely had the hot hand and was able to contribute tremendously on the offensive glass, per se, getting 7 offensive rebounds out of the 10 rebounds he grabbed tonight. That was huge. And he said overall bench production, getting two guys to have double-doubles off your bench with he and Evan Turner, that's, you don't get that every day, and the Celtics certainly don't. But, especially credit Tyler Zeller for staying ready. Evan Turner, who we've seen play really good games off the bench for pretty much the entire season, not getting much credit or much credence for a six-man award right now. I don't think Evan Turner is, but he's been huge for them. But more importantly, he said Tyler Zeller really did a great job in the minutes he's played tonight, shooting effectively 8 of 13 from the field as well, and just an overall plus 11, which was the highest on the team in tonight's game.
Yeah, great job by both of them. I like that you mentioned Turner too, because he just consistently every game, like you said, not worth a sixth man because he probably doesn't play enough minutes and put up enough numbers to get that. But 14 points, 10 rebounds, 6 of 13 shooting, 3 steals too, 4 assists. He really filled up the stat sheet. And like you said, 7 offensive rebounds for Zeller. That's great. So they were definitely the stars off the bench, which is huge to see. 47 bench points for the Celtics in the game. All right, so Stevens is kind of set on a rotation. He's been playing 9 guys pretty much for the most part. But Zeller wasn't as much of a part of that besides getting a couple minutes here and there. Jerebko was getting more minutes. Jerebko only got 7 minutes tonight, and Zeller got 26. So it's interesting how he kind of switched that up. So, how do you – in your opinion, how do you figure this stuff out? Because, you don't play Zeller for so long, and he probably doesn't hardly feel like a part of the team, but he keeps a great attitude, and now he gets a chance to play, and he puts up the numbers. It's how do you decide who to play, and, when does that change? So, why do you not play Zeller for 3 weeks straight, and then all of a sudden kind of ease him back in, and now he plays 26 minutes tonight? How was it decided, who plays when and what?
Yeah, and that's a really – tough and interesting question to ask. I think tonight, is a lot of the result of, the Knicks and their size to some degree with even Robin Lopez. Lopez was just abusing them on the glass, per se, and Zeller needed to kind of come and be a little bit more physical. Sullinger, who obviously has a wide frame and has the base, per se, sometimes is just too short and doesn't do enough from the technical side of things of boxing out and getting in position to keep guys off the glass. Zeller is very fundamental in pretty much everything he does, and did a really effective job tonight, doing that. And then you got that offense from him, especially getting off the glass, some of those putbacks, and was able to hit some of those mid-range jumpers on the pick and pop. He had to ride out with Zeller tonight, and that was what of Jerebko not getting minutes. They didn't place the floor. They needed shooting as much tonight, or the 3-point attempts, I should say, as much tonight. And Jerebko just wasn't really able to be as effective as Zeller was in the minutes he was getting. And again, Zeller came in and was immediately effective. It didn't take him a few minutes to get going. Zeller came in and was impactful immediately. So I think in this situation, Stevens kind of realized that and said, you know what? Well, we got to go with this right now, because right now we're getting our butts kicked on the glass. And the fact that Zeller was even trying to boxing out Lopez a little bit here and there, but then contributing on the offensive glass for the Celtics, that was huge. And that definitely helped quote some of the second chance points that the Knicks got, because I think they finished with something like that. I was looking at earlier. I think they finished with 22 second chance points, and Boston ended up with 10 overall. But it could have been a lot worse had Zeller not been in the game, kind of trying to keep Lopez off the glass a little bit after he got off to that hot start in the first quarter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's good. I think that's a good response for my convoluted, strange question. So, yeah, I guess it's all about how they play and the matchups. Who they? I'm not as good on that stuff, figuring out who would play well against who. I just soak it all in. But Zeller played well, and he is taller than Sullinger, that's for sure. So you got the minutes. Sullinger only had 16 minutes tonight, and Amir Johnson only had 14. So they were pretty ineffective in terms of a playing time standpoint, at least. Isaiah Thomas led the way with 20 points on 7 of 18 shooting, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, another all-star performance from him. Jay Crowder with 16 points on 6 of 10, which is nice for him because he wasn't even for sure to play tonight with a calf injury. Yeah. So he did well with 16 points, 5 rebounds. Kelly Olynyk with 13 points off the bench, most of those late in the game. So good all-around effort for the Celtics. They shot 44%, 40 for 90. So let's talk about the threes, because as we know and talked about quite a bit in the last show, the Celtics shot a franchise record and third most in NBA history for regulation with 46 three-point attempts. And they obviously didn't shoot that well because they only made 16 of those 46. And then tonight, after that performance, they start out in the first half and shoot 0 for 13 in the first half on. So what happened in the second half? Well, they only shot 6 threes in the second half, which is so little for them. They made 3 of 6. They finished 3 for 19 for the game, which obviously is still terrible, but a lot better than 0 for 13. So finally, Warren, they got the message. They stopped shooting threes because they weren't making them.
Yeah, it was a disaster. I think their first 4 attempts in the first quarter were threes. And again, I think they finished their first quarter 0 for 8, and they said 0 for 13 overall in the first half. I mean, it was frustrating to watch initially, and I was just like, God, here we go again. But it got the message one way or the other, and I'd love to be in the locker room right now to kind of ask some of those questions, even to Brad Stevens, to kind of say, hey, you know, what was kind of the mindset here? Because the Boston Celtics pummeled New York on the points in the paint tonight, 58-28. In favor of Boston. So scoring 30 more points in the paint tonight, which is huge. And that just goes to show you that they can do these things. And when they play the right way and be very selective in their shot selection, especially with the type of defense they play, they can be one of the most effective teams out there and letting their defense kind of create their offense. But you just don't need to go out there and fire those threes, even if those shots are there. Sometimes, you know, you just need to move the ball around. And that's what they did tonight. You know, there's a lot of ball fakes, a lot of extra passes that led to some layups and some shots in the paint, a lot of floaters, I think, as well, too. And, you know, that was a welcome sight to see after seeing all those threes launched in the previous game. As again, got a little frayed, a little scared at the beginning of the first half, but they really turned it around in the second half there and got into the paint and made a big difference in this outcome.
Yeah, and to that point, really going inside after the third quarter, the Celtics were leading 40-18 points in the paint over the Knicks. So they were really, really getting the ball inside, really scoring a lot inside, which you can give a lot of credit to Zeller and to Olynyk later on. He had some drives to the basket. Turner's always playing inside. So, and obviously Thomas drives the basket a lot. So that was just great to see, period, because not shooting the threes and actually getting points in the paint is not something that's been happening a whole lot recently. So that was a really nice change. Yeah, they've really played well overall. In the last three quarters, they just through three quarters only had 7 turnovers. The Knicks had 16. The Knicks actually finished with 16. Celtics had 10, but they limited the turnovers. So just a really good second half. Second quarter was good too, but especially really good second half and a really good third quarter, outscoring the Knicks 25-18. Because the third quarter really has been the Celtics' problem for the most part this year. They've had a lot of bad third quarters. So to actually outscore a team and actually get some distance in the third quarter was really important, in my opinion. So let's look at some Knicks here. You know, the Celtics are 2-1 against them this year, 100-91 win on December 27th. Knicks won 120-114 recently on January 12th. And then obviously tonight's game, 97-89. That last game was just weird because Carmelo Anthony didn't even play in the second half because he sprained his ankle. And Kristaps Porzingis fouled out with like 3 minutes left, and the Knicks ended up playing better and winning. Porzingis had a great game in that one. So then you look at tonight, Porzingis was 4 for 11, pretty ineffective, only 10 points. Carmelo had 14 rebounds. He had 16 points, but he shot 4 for 16 from the field. And as a team, the Knicks only shot 37%. So do they play better without Carmelo Anthony?
I mean, that's arguable in this game. I think I was actually on the post game show for the last game when they did do that, and Carmelo was playing great. So even though Porzingis and it was Langston Galloway and Jerian Grant who carried them to the W and Aaron Aflalo, like just everyone stepped up in that game for them. Carmelo was having a very good game, you know, when he went out with an ankle injury. So, you know, tonight it just wasn't their night. They played great defense. They really closed on Melo, made his shots tough. You know, Crowder, especially at times, was able to get into his area and even force him to give it up, which he has been, ironically, been giving it up a little bit more this year. But I think the shots he did get, you know, they were pretty much all contested, and just wasn't in a rhythm because of the Celtics defense. And again, I said it on the last show, sometimes you see Boston over rotating here and there. They seem to do a good job of closing out when needed to, and not, you know, letting guys get by them on the closeout and then getting into the lane and causing some havoc. Again, there were some issues early, especially early on, keeping New York off the glass offensively, but they did a good job and definitely closing out on Carmelo overall. Porzingis only shot 4 of 11 himself, you know, played 27 minutes. So just a nice job from the Boston defense tonight, because you really just saw them kind of that five guys on a string type of mantra and holding this team to under 90 points, which is very, very good, especially when you're on the road and they're building in a hostile environment in New York. So kudos to the Celtics defense tonight, and then did a great, excellent job, not just good job, excellent job defending Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, it's always good to get a win in MSG. So, and that's what Celtics did. So, okay. Yeah, they stopped Anthony in this game. Cool. I want to get your thoughts. I don't know in general, but what do you think of Carmelo Anthony's career? Obviously, he won a championship at Syracuse in 2003. Has not won a whole lot in the NBA, that's for sure. Is this guy a winner at all? Do you think he ever will win a championship? And what is he doing?
Tough, man. I'm not, for lack of a better phrase, a Carmelo hater. I mean, I understand who he is and what he represents, but I can't say that he's a winner or champion championship type level player. I think he now somewhat understands what it's going to take to be there at this stage of his career. What is he, 31 now or something like that? So, and he's seen some of his you know, his counterparts get there. Obviously, LeBron and Dwayne Wade, they're all good friends. But he also has another friend, and Chris Paul, who he's close with. And Chris Paul hasn't gotten to that promised land yet. But nobody's really questioning him. Chris Paul is a leader. So I think Melo understands that he needs to take something a little bit from all of those guys who have won. They have kind of come together. And he wants to be in New York. He wants it to happen there. And that's why you're not seeing him fight against Kristaps Porzingis and the fame that Porzingis is even attaining as a rookie, because I think the old Melo would have been really hesitant to that, would have been, you know, hating the rookie terribly and not giving him the ball. But Carmelo gives it up to Porzingis specifically at times and understands that he needs help in order to be better. And, you know, Melo's been banged up the last couple of seasons too, and even this season as well. So, you know, let's not take that granted. But I recognize Carmelo as a great scorer. But I, again, right now he's not a champion or a winner per se, but I don't think that's even necessarily a knock on him. I think it's something that's taken him a long time to understand and to get to, and maybe even longer still to even finish and actually get there when all is said and done. But I think he's heading in the right direction now, with Porzingis on his team. And I think he's been playing a lot more unselfishly than he has in seasons past. You know, I would be interested to see what your thoughts on the situation with Carmelo.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a Carmelo hater per se. I'm not a fan of his game, because I feel like he's just been kind of a selfish player, and he just wants to do everything himself. And if that means shooting 6 for 30, then he'll shoot 6 for 30. He just wants the ball. He wants to play offense. Obviously, he's a good offensive player. He's got great numbers over his career, no question about that. But people expect him to be so good, and he just doesn't have the wins to back that up. And obviously he can't do it by himself. Clearly he proved that year after year. And he's just, I don't know. He doesn't seem to, you know, obviously not a lot of people have that championship drive, and sometimes they need to be like pushed out of them, but he's just given me no reason to believe that he has any kind of championship drive. It just doesn't seem like he cares that much. It's like he settled for the championship in Syracuse and was like, I'm good. I want a college championship. And he just doesn't, I don't know. To me, he just doesn't have that drive to care enough to get to that point. He doesn't want to put the work in, be an all-around player. You know, obviously, like you said.
I think that's fair. No. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, I think that's fair. I think early on, you definitely saw where he wanted things to be easy. like if winning happened to come along with him shooting 30 shots a night, then great. If it didn't, well, then that was cool too. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I definitely think this specific season and this season alone, I think you're seeing a different Carmelo, and not to say much, but a little bit has been made about that. And I think there are some reports saying that, you know, he's doing very well in terms of passing the ball. His assist numbers are up and everything like that. And maybe it's too late. You know, I don't know. You know, what other moves the Knicks are going to make at Phil Jackson at the helm there. But you're 100% correct. Early on, he wanted everything the easy way. And again, he wanted to score. And then when he was paired in Denver with Allen Iverson and George Karl and a team that really had a good chance because they were so potent offensively, they just weren't able to put it together in the playoffs. I think they lost to the Lakers that year, I think in six games, and they just haven't really, they never got back to that same level of success in Denver. And now he's in New York where they had one good season that surprised everybody, you know, surprised the hell out of me when they won 50 games and, you know, were challenging teams in the Eastern Conference, but they didn't have enough, and you know they got dispatched pretty easily. And Melo hasn't been the same since, and he's, like you said, been trying to do everything himself. So again, hopefully he's turned the page, but you just wonder if it's too late for him and the Knicks in general.
Yeah, that's the thing. At this point in his career, and he's logged a lot of miles, and it's just at this point he's going to need a lot of help. And for him to win a championship, he'd probably have to join a team like, you know, the Warriors or the Spurs or maybe the Cavs, put him and LeBron together. That's probably a terrible combination, so forget that. But in general, put him with, like, really good players and then try to win a championship that way, because there's no way he's going to do it like this. I think the Knicks are a good franchise, and they're getting better, and I do want to get your thoughts on that in a second. But they're not going to win for a while, I don't think. They're not going to be at championship level for a while, well, how they're going now. So by the time that happens, he'll probably be retired. So I just don't see how he's going to win a championship, and I don't think he cares that much. So we'll see. But going further off that, what is your thoughts on this franchise? They're a way better team this year than they were last year. Definitely getting Porzingis is huge. It's hilarious that their fans booed Porzingis on draft night because he is fantastic. So where do you see them as a franchise going? Like, how many wins do you think they can get this year? How can they build on this? So where do you see them headed?
Well, I mean, again, they're night and day better than they were a season ago, as you mentioned, and you have to be impressed with the rook Porzingis and what they've established. They've taken out the 100% triangle offense. Like they run elements of it now, and that has simplified things for some of them. The Aaron Aflalo signing, I thought, was decent for them. Getting Robin Lopez, you know, kind of one of those analytical darlings, if you will. I think that was a nice signing for them, and they're heading in the right direction. I don't know if they're gonna really be in the playoff picture at the end of the day. I mean, they were there for a little bit, and you know, I think they've lost six of their last seven games now. Unfortunately, they do need to address that point guard situation. And, you know, they're starting to have some rumors, Jeff Teague potentially coming there. The guy that was waived from the 76ers, Tony Roten, was somebody. But, I mean, like everyone says, do you want somebody who was waived from the 76ers? So, you know, that's why Roten doesn't have a contract just yet. But if they were able to pull off a move and get Teague, that would definitely give them some legitimate push, especially in this season. And it would be interesting to see if they would be able to make that type of move with the Atlanta Hawks, who they traded with earlier in the season. I mean, and sorry, over the summer, because that's how they got Grant, by trading away Tim Hardaway Jr. And Grant, I think, is a good rookie who definitely should be getting a little bit more time. Calderon is kind of the thing of the past. Something against the guy, he's had a decent career, but he's definitely not a point guard on a playoff contending team right now. So they need to get that situation under control. And overall, they're heading in the right direction, but they don't have any picks. They will have some cap space, as a lot of teams will, as we've talked about a lot, you know, in recent weeks. And they have the lure of New York and they have still Jackson. So maybe, you know, they're able to pull a rabbit out of the hat, if you will, and get a free agent to kind of come over there. If they don't trade for a point guard this season, maybe, again, they could sign one in free agency this summer. Mike Conley has also been linked to them. Not a point guard, but DeMar DeRozan is going to be a free agent as well. So they may be looking at that situation too, to shore up the backcourt. So they have some options on the table. They'll have some money. They have a good market. I don't know what Carmelo's overall reputation is in the league in terms of recruiting players. Do guys want to come there and play with him? Do they look at this season and see him trying to sacrifice a little bit I think Porzingis is a selling point, but is Carmelo a selling point for some of these other guys that might be out there? But overall, headed in the right direction. I don't think they're going to get there this year, but again, that's not a knock on them overall because I really do like what they've done thus far, especially with the drafting of Porzingis.
Yeah, they're definitely headed in the right track, that's for sure. So I think Porzingis is a selling point. I don't think Carmelo is at this point. Could be wrong, but we'll see. We'll see how they do the rest of the season. Don't think they're good enough for the playoffs this year. They actually lost 6 out of the last 7 games now with this loss. So they're heading in the wrong direction currently, at least in the last couple of weeks. So we'll see if they can turn it around. Once again, this is the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. Warren Shaw, Jess Thomas here. You can follow CLNS Radio at Twitter at CLNS Radio. You can follow me at CLNS_JessSane. And you can follow Warren at Shaw Sports NBA. So make sure you check out all of that. Celtics win 97-89 in this game. It looks like we do have a caller, but I don't think they want to be on the air. So area code 617, if you do want to be on, make sure you press 1 on your phone, and that will alert us that you want to be on the air. If not, we'll just leave you as B. Anybody else want to call in, you can call into the Audible toll-free call line at 347-215-7771. The CLNS radio call lines are powered by Audible. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, and sports. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving, running errands in the gym, or simply at home relaxing. For audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just head over to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Browse all of the programs, download a title for free, and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider is CLNS guest, sports beat legend Bob Ryan. He's joined the show many times. His book, Scribe, you can get a free 30-day trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Download Scribe, narrated by Bob himself. Once again, audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Start your 30-day free trial today. All right. So we'll let area code 617 keep listening if they want to be on. Once again, just press 1. We'll throw you on here. So let's see. Other tidbits from this game. Hilarious stat from the first half, really for the whole game, but especially from the first half. Robin Lopez, New York center, had 9 rebounds in the first half, and every single one of them was offensive. He had no defensive rebounds in the half. He finished with 13 rebounds, 11 offensive, 2 defensive. First of all, Warren, how is that even possible?
Yeah, God only knows.
How do you do that?
I was like, yo, somebody box this guy out, and then all of a sudden – I guess he did get boxed out, or the effort wasn't there. It was, you know, very, very odd stat, you know, for Robin Lopez. But, yeah, I can't even explain it. I'm not going to sit here and, you know, credit any one thing Boston did per se. You know, the effort was definitely better, especially in the second half. But, yeah, he was abusing us in that first quarter. It was very frustrating to watch. And I thought he was, you know, on pace for one of those epic rebounding nights somewhere in the 20s. Finished with 13, as you mentioned. And thankfully, Boston was able to get that guy under control because that first quarter had me very, very concerned.
And it's funny, too, because even, like, getting the offensive rebounds, 9 is ridiculous and a half for offensive purposes. But to not even get any defensive rebounds, how can you be so one-sided, getting all offensive and then just not getting anything on defense? Like, Celtics were missing shots. He just wasn't getting that defensive rebound. So just kind of a strange, odd tidbit that I want to mention because it was just so weird. And so often you don't see that. You know, you have Carmelo with 14 rebounds, 13 defensive, 1 offensive. That's more normal. You have Langston Galloway, 9 rebounds, which is pretty impressive for a guard. 8 defensive, 1 offensive. Then you have Lopez with 13 rebounds, 11 offensive, 2 defensive. It's just, like, makes zero sense. So, just want to throw it out there. Pretty strange.
But, it definitely confused me. So, yeah, I mean, he finished with 11 offensive on the night, which is, you know, more than some guys get in a week, however. But, yeah, don't know why he wasn't able to continue that torrid pace one way or the other. But, hey, that's better for us. So let the Knicks worry about that and figure that out. You know, having your starting center only get two defensive rebounds, but 11 on the offensive class. You know, hey, that's their issue to deal with. So yeah, definitely need to move on for that.
Yeah, it's just funny with stats like that because, like, you know, people like us were sitting there watching the game, not necessarily tracking every stat, maybe following the stats as you go. But then you see something like that, and you're just like, wow, how that even happened? I'm sitting here watching the game, and you don't even realize that something like that's happening. And then all of a sudden, you know, they stop getting rebounds. And then you look later on, you're like, wow, they've only gotten one rebound. That guy's only on one rebound since he had that crazy stat line. And it's like, what changes in the game specifically, such a change in the stats? Like, you don't notice it because you're just kind of watching the game as a whole. You know, you'd have to be sitting there looking at Lopez and Lopez only and seeing everything that he does, which most normal people don't do when they're watching games because they're watching, you know, who's scoring and what's going on with the ball, because that's usually what you do in basketball because you want to score. So those things are always funny to me, just like noticing stats and then like trying to put it with what you saw and be like, this just makes sense because I didn't even see that happen. That's kind of a quirky thing I've just been noticing.
No, again, I definitely back you up on that because, again, it was so apparent in the first quarter. Then, like you said, you just kind of, I don't know if you even realized that it stopped, you know, from the offensive standpoint. Like, well, yeah, what happened there? And then said the fact that it didn't even translate to him now all of a sudden getting defensive rebounds. Like, he pretty much stopped rebounding altogether for the rest of the game. So, yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, again, like I said, it's the NBA or basketball in general. It's just it's a very, very odd thing, you know. And sometimes you look at the overall box score, like you said, it does not paint the true picture or true indication of what happened. Because you see he had 17 and 13. You're like, oh, a great game. But you realize, you know, he had X amount of rebounds in the first half. Like, okay, well, maybe not. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, he only played the first, like, 24 minutes where that was good. The rest of the time, he wasn't as impactful. But definitely, you know, from a statistical standpoint, nice. But overall impact, definitely he was only effective in the first half.
Right. You look at other players like Aaron Aflalo, and you're like, well, 18 points, good game. Well, spoiler alert, he had 13 of those in the first half. So he only scored 5 in the second half, and that's when the Celtics were outscoring the Knicks. So the Knicks needed a flaw of his offense. He wasn't given it. So stats are deceiving. You gotta like see how they span out over the game.
Game
flow.
Yeah. Game flow is always important.
Right. No, yeah, exactly. So just a little thing I was noticing. Was for people who didn't see the game, we'll break it down a little further here before we just check out the upcoming couple of games. I know we did it on the last show, but we can look a little further ahead. But just a couple notes from this game just as it went. Like I said, the Celtics are up 29-22 early after going on a 14-2 run. The Knicks went on a 10-2 run after that. They took a 32-31 lead, ended up taking a 47-45 halftime lead. Knicks are up by 2. Avery Bradley cut it to the 2 points with a jumper at the end of the first half. Celtics came out pretty well in the third quarter. Finally decided to make 2 threes. Samir Johnson, Jay Crowder hit back-to-back threes, which put them at 2 for 15 of the night after their 0-for-13 start, like we talked about earlier. And they Celtics ended up taking a 70-65 lead with 1 quarter left after 3, outscoring the Knicks 25-18 in the third. Isaiah Thomas had 18 points after 3, so he scored 2 in the fourth. Jay Crowder had 16 after 3 quarters. That's all he ended up scoring for the game. Like I said earlier, 40-18 points in the paint after 3 quarters. And then the Celtics started off the fourth quarter perfectly in a time they really needed to score. They scored the first 6 points of the fourth quarter to take a 76-65 lead. And the Knicks counter with a run of their own, 7-0, to get back 81-77 a bit later with 7.5 minutes left in the game. Then the Knicks went over four minutes without a field goal, and it really killed them in the end because that's kind of where the Celtics jumped ahead. Tyler Zeller, Evan Turner really getting the job done. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was 91-81. The Celtics were up 10 all of a sudden because the Knicks just forgot how to score the ball. And the Celtics ended up taking it 97-89. So that was kind of the flow of the game there. A lot of runs for both teams as basketball usually works. So that's how this game played out. I just want to remind everyone, once again, this is not a home game, so we will not have the the locker room report, but you can check out the Garden Report on CLNS Radio's YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/CLNSRadio, the best of written, spoken, and watched Boston sports coverage. And have high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews with multiple players and Coach Brad Stevens. The Garden Report, which is a HD post-game show shot straight in the parquet floor at the TD Garden. So you have our post-game show where we hear from our locker room guy, Jared Weiss. And then you also have a different post-game show with the Garden Report. So I got you covered in multiple ways here on CLNS Radio. And the locker room report during home games is brought to you by Grandstand App. Sports highlights from fans in the stands. It's a new sports app. You can share your own Celtics highlights, watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. It's a pretty cool app. You can download it on the App Store at grandstand.me. So make sure you check out the Celtics locker room report for all home games. All right, before we fade away into the night here, we previewed this game on the last show, and we both thought it would be a pretty good like a chance the Celtics to get a win. They did, clearly. If you've listened to the show, you know that by now. And they have Detroit on Wednesday, Cleveland on Friday, and then Sacramento Kings on Sunday afternoon, Milwaukee Bucks on Tuesday. So I know we kind of previewed the three, but now going further to the next four games, not counting this one tonight, how do you see these next four games playing out, and maybe you got a record for the team in those four games? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm still gonna go with the potential loss Friday night. just not feeling real confident with what Cleveland's been being able to do. I think they can definitely beat Detroit tomorrow, and Sacramento. Rondo coming back both Sunday. Cousins, I think should be back. I know he has an ankle injury, but if Cousins is not there, that you definitely have to win that game. With Cousins there, they're very, very tough. So I'm not 100% sure with that, but they've been struggling in general right now. But that's again, at home, you should be able to pull that one off. And the Milwaukee Bucks, again, another team that's been struggling too. So I think I saw someone today, Celtics blog or somewhere like that, was saying that this could potentially be an 11-1 month, or is that a realistic expectation for the Celtics? And yeah, there's 11 winnable games. I just don't know that they're going to do it, and they need to have that consistency kind of throughout. And again, I guess Trum and I would be game flow, understanding game flow and picking their spots from the three, and then, knowing when to drive, and then even Brad Stevens knowing what rotations to kind of play out there with some of the different lineups, because Milwaukee's very, very long, and they concern me, because I always feel like they're eventually going to turn it around, although they haven't really been able to do so thus far this season. But I guess in short, I'd like to say that they're going to get three wins out of the next four, per se, with that Cleveland game being very, very tough. But I definitely would put a circle on that Sacramento game, especially Rondo coming back, going to be a triple-double there to watch out for. And Sacramento, they're definitely going to give their best effort.
Yeah, I like it. I'm inclined to say the same with 3-1. But not necessarily a Cleveland loss. Maybe we can pull off a road win. We've been saying, pretty good road team this year. It'll be tough. I think they could do it. But I don't know, the Pistons game, it could be tough. It's a home game, but the Celtics have struggled with the Pistons this year. They've 1-2 against them so far. Sacramento, like you said, that's going to be a tough game, especially if Cousins is there. Rondo will be motivated. You saw what happened last time. He was motivated against the Celtics. When he was on the Mavericks, he scored 29 points. He went crazy. So watch out for him and them. I mean, the Celtics are obviously a better team than the Kings, and the Kings are very inconsistent. They'll have a terrible game, and they'll have a really good game. So hopefully we catch them on one of their bad games. Cousins has been really – played pretty poorly against the Celtics the last couple of times. He always seems to get worked up. He's got that little feud with Marcus Smart where he chucked him down on the ground. So right. I'm not necessarily worried about him because he's never played well against us. So depending on how Rondo does and the rest of their team, hopefully that's a win. And Milwaukee, yeah, they haven't played well this year, so hopefully they pull off a road win there. So I wouldn't be surprised if the team went 3-1, but I'm not necessarily 100% sold that it's going to be a Cleveland game, so we'll see. But that's what the Celtics have coming up.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I mean, one way or another, it all comes out on the wash, if you say. And again, as long as they can get three wins out of the next four, maybe 4 out of 4, who knows? We're definitely trying to think positive here, but yeah, they have to bring it every night, as every NBA team does. But this extent, like I said on Sunday, there's a difference between being very good and being elite. And if they ever want to even approach elite status, they need to go ahead and take care of business against some winnable teams and winnable games here coming up. So if they have a good showing against Cleveland, then you kind of put that one in the bank. If they somehow get that W, not looking ahead past Detroit tomorrow, but you put that in the bank, then you're kind of ahead of the game there. So hopefully, we'll get their best effort over the next coming week or so, heading into All-Star. And we'll see where we're at, going into the All-Star break, where they're at in the Eastern Conference, and then a lot of that is going to spark up some of the trade rumors and trade machines and all that. But hopefully they're in a good position where they can finish the season out strong.
Yeah, right. Like, say they go 5-0 in the last five games. They got the Clippers on Wednesday, so Paul Pierce, Doc Rivers coming back. Just say in the off chance they go 5-0, and they're sitting here with a 33-22 record going to the All-Star break, they might not necessarily feel a need to make a deal because they'll beat one of the better teams in the league. So yeah. These next five games are definitely big, and like we said, if we're going to consider this team like one of the better teams and a really good team, you need to beat teams like Sacramento and Milwaukee, who are some of the worst records in the league. So definitely interested to see what they come up with in those games. So that's that. Detroit on Wednesday, Cleveland on Friday, Sacramento on Sunday, and those are your next three. So I think that's going to do it for us here. Definitely want to encourage people to call into future shows at 347-215-7771 on the Audible podcast toll-free call line here. I want to thank everyone for listening to us today, back-to-back shows with the two of us. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Hope everyone enjoyed the win tonight. And once again, Celtics 97, Knicks 89. Warren, another good show.
My man, a pleasure. Always a pleasure, to talk Celtics basketball, especially with you. Again, as you said, I hope everybody enjoyed us kind of back-to-back, unforeseen, but I'm glad it definitely worked out for me, and I think it worked out for you. So I hope all the listeners enjoyed it as well. I don't think I'm back on for quite some time, maybe the end of the month. But, hopefully the Celtics, like I said, they'll be in a very, very good position, even better than they are now. And definitely we'll be watching. Make sure you're tuning into us on Twitter and all the social media sites that are out there, man. Love to hear it, man. Good, great game for Boston. Big win versus New York Knicks tonight. Hopefully get another one versus Detroit tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm hosting the Clippers game, the day before the All-Star break on the 10th. So you can check me out then and make sure you check out all the shows here in the upcoming weeks. And like Warren said, hopefully by the time he's doing a show, then hopefully we're sitting in a good position with a lot of games in March. So we'll see how it goes. And for now, that'll do it for us. Celtics post-game show, Warren Shaw, Jess Thomas. Hope everyone has a fantastic night, and go Celtics.